Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all lines are open and interactive. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you, and you may begin.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, everyone. It's now 1310 UTC, and we're ready to start. And apologies for the technical difficulties, and we'll be letting more people into the Adobe Connect room as we migrate everyone over. We're very likely to be using the same room for the second call today, so I will send a note to the list to clarify that as well. Jonathan and Lisa, off to you.
Thank you, Grace. Welcome, everyone, to today's first call, the third of our CWG meetings over this intensive work weekend. Apologies on our behalf for the technical issues. We will, as has become custom, take those present in the Adobe Connect room as present in the meeting. We'll wait for a few minutes before confirming that list, recognizing that some are still joining the call. So if I could ask for anyone who is on the audio but not in the AC room to make themselves known now so we can record you as present in the meeting. Anyone on audio but not in the AC room, please make yourself known. Okay, so we will record in 5 minutes or so from now everyone in the AC room as present in the meeting. It is our aim to pick up from yesterday, which was had a good level of participation, a very constructive tone to the work which we did. So thank you very much for that. Thanks for all of those who both gave up their time and worked in a meaningful and constructive way that put us made good progress within the overall objective, which is to just make sure you're on mute, please. You're getting a little bit of noise through on the line, which is to take the input that was given on the surveys, which was intended to really provide an effective feedback loop from the public comments back into the CWG and make sure that we had processed those and surveyed some of the key components coming out of that in the most efficient and time-effective manner. Before we go on with the meeting proper, as per a suggestion we received on list and in any event, we thought it would be appropriate, the co-chairs have discussed this and thought it would be appropriate to just hold a minute silence in recognition of the terrible events that have unfolded in France over the last week and all of that has followed from that. So if you'll bear with us, we'll just hold a minute silence now. If you could all mute your lines, and we will proceed with the call proper after that. Thank you. Thank you for that and for effectively participating and keeping things quiet. Right, let's begin with the day's work then. So thanks again for yesterday's work. As I said, it was good constructive participation and we aim to pick up from that yesterday. We have a couple of items remaining from the work we were doing on Survey 1, which we conclude with, and then we plan to go straight into Survey 2, with the objective of continuing to process the survey outputs and use these to highlight areas of convergence build on that convergence and build out in detail where necessary and appropriate. If I could encourage you all in thinking about your responses to these to aim to focus on, in many cases, as far as possible, highlighting the issue to be solved and the motivation behind it, as opposed to necessarily simply the solution. So if you can, in explaining any position, highlight the issue to be solved and the motivation for that, I think that will help us in trying to drive convergence on the more intractable points if we understand one another's motivations and underlying issue that needs to be solved. I'll just note that to that extent, there is a whole, our fourth meeting, the following meeting from this, is dedicated to dealing with links into the work of the accountability working group and the issues of accountability that this group needs to either deal with or effectively and logically and solidly hand over to or link into the work of the accountability working group. I should also note that at the end of these four meetings, given the intensity and the pace and the fact that not everyone will have been able to participate in all of them, we will try, myself and Lisa, to come together to produce some form of communique that won't be a substitute for the formal records of the meeting, but should be helpful perhaps in communicating the work that's been done and any outcomes that have resulted and where we are as a work group at the end of this weekend. All right. So I see a hand up from Sean. Please go ahead, Sean.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, thank you very much. This is Sean. I've been typing a few things in the chat, and I think it's important that you kind of acknowledge it. I have nothing against the Paris folks, but I think it's important that we don't take any country issue into this discussion. Thank you. Please, I don't think it should repeat itself again. Otherwise, I will also demand for a minute silence for the incident that happened in Nigeria. Thank you.
Sean, that's a very fair point, and actually I did see the news about Nigeria on the television this morning, and it was shocking, and I appreciate your point and understand the sensitivity of picking one country's challenges or one group's, and so I apologize to the extent that seemed insensitive and recognize that in many ways we should have probably use that minute silence to recognize all victims of similar kinds of acts. So thank you for bringing that to my and our attention. All right, let's get on to the work of the day then, notwithstanding that. So from the survey yesterday, we had not yet completely dealt with the I think it was the final two yellow items, Lisa, was that right, from survey one, which is question 15 in the first instance. And so picking up on question 15, the MRT's primary function should be deciding whether to renew the IANA functions contract and whether the IANA naming functions contract needs to be amended. This is We're on survey one, question 15, which was the first of two yellow items that was not dealt with yesterday.
Yeah, that's right.
So just reminding you from yesterday that the survey responses were categorized into the strength of view expressed around them. We worked through the green, which was most clearly defined in the terms we worked with, and the yellows, which were less clearly defined, were highlighted in the method that Robert described yesterday.
Crash.
Okay. So there's a couple of issues that arise from this, really. What we're trying to do here is make sure that we as a group acknowledge the point made, the results of the survey, seek to hear from anyone who had strong disagreement to understand the motivation for that strong disagreement and the background to it if necessary, and any comments or detail as to how we should effect a solution or come up with particular detail relating to that particular point. Any comments or questions in relation to 15? Martin Boyle, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. Martin Boyle here. Yeah, I was one of the people who Mark strongly disagree, but I was strongly disagreeing to the fact that I actually saw the MRT's primary function as being to try and resolve difficulties and find solutions rather than moving straight into it being to amend the contract or to renew the functions contract. So it really was a matter of emphasis that what I was looking for was something that very much more saw it as being solutions oriented rather than essentially crisis management. Yes, on that basis, I probably can move away if we recognize that wider role for the MRT. Thank you.
Thanks, Martin. That's helpful insight. Alan?
Yeah, I certainly read this question of, you know, saying that there is no other role, therefore there are a whole slew of things that no one is doing. The MRT is the only body around that is going to be able to, is empowered to do any sort of remediation on problems. And this goes back to, I think, the way people used to describe the old registrar agreement as the only option we have is de-accreditation. And that's not the way to fix problems, so.
Well, yeah, thanks. Thanks, Alan. And you'll note that yesterday we had quite a comprehensive discussion about functions and scope and purpose of both the CSC and the MRT, which I hope also may help with some underlying progress there.
Sure.
Elise?
Yes, thank you. This is Elise. Can you hear me now? Is my mic better today?
Yes, it's good. Thanks, Elise.
Okay, thank you. No, I agree with Martin that we should, of course, the primary function of the MRT is to solve problems. Of course, that should be underlined. And I think we get into a lot of trouble if we define it as deciding whether to renew the contract or not. That is also a function, but the main function is to solve problems and to talk to the whole community about how to do that and to have a connection with the
most
community, as to speak.
So I'm just going to check something here because, Bernie, I think you're going to be potentially holding the pen on a future iteration of the draft. And I just want to make sure you're satisfied that the notes from the conversation reflect some of the nuances that are coming through, or are you needing, are you happy that the notes that are being performed here will give you the guidance you need? Okay, good.
That's in your hand, Jonathan.
Yeah, go ahead. I was just you read my mind. Alan, go ahead.
Sorry, I just wanted to ask, are there any comments associated with this question which explain why so many people agreed that all it should do is reissue contracts? I just find this anomalous in light of so many other discussions we've had over many months.
Okay, that's provoked a slew of hands to come up. The question certainly says primary function, not only function, so let's be clear on that. Bernard, your hand is up. Bernie, go ahead.
Yeah, along the lines of Alan, I mean, just making that same clarification Jonathan said, is primary function, and I'm more supportive of Elise and more cognizant of Elise's point that, you know, there's a range of solving solutions that's probably a more practical way of viewing this, but it's not represented here, and that's a concern to me. And maybe because of the discussions yesterday, the mood has changed. I'm just wondering, you know, is that a valid question? Thank you.
Thanks, Bernie. Go ahead, Avery.
Thank you. Yeah, I put my hand up because I was one of those that Mark strongly agree. So since the question was being asked, I figured I'd explain. First of all, yes, taking into account that the primary view is that. So I saw the MR as being fundamentally linked with there being a contract co in that mainstream proposal. And what has concerned me and I believe many, but it is a mixed view at this point, and I think perhaps yesterday it did change a little, is what I believe I'm seeing is already scope creep in the MRT. And so when I look at the word primarily, I see its activities not in terms of certainly a day-to-day problem solver, and not even in terms of solving the greater problems, because those are, you know, they're either policy issues or perhaps they're CSC issues. And yes, I know there's the escalation, but I've always been somewhat insecure about what it means to escalate to the MRT and an issue from the CSC and not to the IAP unless you're dealing with the larger review aspect of the relationship. So when I say primary function, it means that all of its other activities seem to need to be related to the review of that, and the review having been one of those things that was dependent on the existence of a contract co. Now, we've started to broaden the notion of an MRT and say, well, perhaps even in the alternate solutions that may be created and fleshed out, that there will be a function for something like the MRT, but in my mind that is a different entity because it would have a different kind of scope. So my strong agreement with this had to do with basically how do we avoid scope creep? We avoid scope creep by making sure that as much as possible the functions of the MRT pertain to its renewal and its staying with a particular provider and not getting deep into the weeds of all the other issues. Thank you.
Thanks, Avery. So a couple of quick thoughts before we move on through the queue. I see Sean said, I think one main reason why more tend to agree is that most answer the survey with a contract co in mind, and clearly the stated objective was that the survey was surveying independent of that component of the solution, but I can understand and see that in many ways that was the only or main show in town at that stage of the survey being done, so I could see how that could happen. I think Avery and others making those points with practical suggestions as to in scope and out of scope would be very helpful in terms of ongoing drafting, so that's to the extent that you can give any guidance, further guidance is helpful. Greg, go ahead.
Actually, I want to... What's scope creep?
Greg, could you start again? I accidentally muted your microphone instead of mine.
Thank you, Jonathan. Greg Chapman for the record. I actually wanted to start with a question to ask Avery what scope creep she thought she was seeing occurring already with regard to the MRT.
Uh, quickly, Avery, is basically it getting involved in more and more of the, you know, indeterminate number of issues that a CSE might send up to it. It getting involved in things that are near policy. It being a body that's sitting all the time, and as opposed to just coming into existence when it's needed for a review or something like that. So I see almost all the functions outside of the review as being in the scope keep, but especially anything where it gets involved in anything having to do with individual issues or policy-related issues.
Yeah, thanks. I'm not sure I see those same things, but thank you for clarifying that. I think I was one of those that answered that they disagreed for the reason I think that there was said earlier, that this is, it's supposed to be a problem-solving body and it's supposed to be a reviewing body. The contract and contract co are, in essence, just tools to be wielded by the MRT. And if those tools aren't there, the MRT would still exist and would wield other tools in order to achieve the same objective. So I think that, you know, concentrating on the contract and contract co kind of misses the point that the MRT is really exists for the purpose of being the place where the multi-stakeholder community comes together and deals with the issues, whether they're escalated from the CSC or whether they are come up from performance reviews that are currently mandated in the IANA contract and the like. And the last thing I would say is that the MRT and the IAP are fundamentally different types of bodies. The IAP is an outside arbitrator. And if you look at how, going back to contractual arrangements, or typically what happens is if you're in a contract with somebody and you get into a dispute about their performance or some other issue, you try to resolve the issue between the two parties. And only when you can't do that, then you turn to an outside arbitrator to try to solve the problem. So taking things to the IAP means there needs to be two parties in front of the IAP who have differing views of the issue. Taking something to the MRT means that there is going to be a discussion between the MRT and the IANA functions operator to try to enforce what the MRT and, by extension, the community see as the problem with the IANA functions operator's performance. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. I note Brendan's point. I think the definition of the proposal allows for the activities Martin, mentioned. And I guess it's important to recognize that these questions seek to act on a piece of detail or a response to the public comment. And so the primary source of what the MRT does or doesn't do is in the draft proposal, and really what we're seeking to do is modify and move on that draft proposal. There's an echo on the line, if people could mute their lines. I'm keen to move on to the next point, but we have Elise in the queue, so we'll take Elise's point, and then we'll move on to the next yellow item. Elise, go ahead.
It's Elise. Yeah. I'm a bit puzzled by Avery's comments, because I thought yesterday we had a good discussion on the scope and the role of the CSC, and I think in that discussion we kind of got a long way of defining how the MRT is a receiver of escalated questions from the CSC or problems that occur. So I don't see the MRT stepping into the daily basis in business. That is something that we are discussing now. I think the CSC is the day-to-day business, the technical business, and the MRT is the escalating body that could look if they are escalated. So I think we also discussed yesterday that we don't need too much detail in how these lines doesn't have to be drawn so detailed. I think it will solve itself if we have the good communication between RT and the CSC.
Thanks, Elise. We did indeed do some good work yesterday on the relative scope of the CSC and the MRT. So thanks for reminding us of that.
and the, some of that detail. I'm going to move us on to the next point on Survey 1 so we can close that off. And that's point 21, which achieved a yellow ranking. And that is to say the composition of the size of the MRT should be difficult to alter or amend. And I guess there was a pretty large no opinion on this, although and then there was sufficient disagreement or to keep it, to make it yellow, not green. Any comments or thoughts on this, Greg?
All hand.
Okay, moving on to Alan Greenberg.
Yeah, I was one of the ones who made a comment saying that the answer, in my mind, is substantively different depending on whether this is an internal or external solution. And given that we were supposed to be thinking it outside of the solution answer, that made it difficult to answer.
Okay, that's helpful. And Alan, does that position still hold for you, or given where we seem to, where we are right now, do you see, almost in a yes or no for the moment, but if you have detail, you feel free to add it, a significant difference in the MRT whether or not there is a so-called internal or external solution?
In my mind, yes, there is, because in a contract co-solution, the fear of capture is a very large one, and therefore you want to be very careful that changes are not made which end up as a first or second order effect capture. In an ICANN-centric solution, the ICANN multi-stakeholder body is behind, you know, organization is behind it and acting as a balance to that.
Okay, so that feels to me like something that needs to come out perhaps in the work of RFP3B, that it needs to really, when you and others on that group do that work, you need to be very clear in specifying how function and scope of DSC, MRT, or other components of the proposal would change in respect of a so-called internal solution. Right now, I mean, I hear, and I think I understand what you're saying. I guess my view, just not to assert my view, but just to understand how some might have this view, I've been seeing the CSC and the MRT as somewhat independent of the solution. So I think it'll be important to highlight why that, or how those differ in your view. When I say yours, your collective view is RFP3B when that work gets done.
Indeed, and you know, in the extreme, Steve Crocker has said he doesn't see the need for an MRT at all. I don't agree with that, but it's the continuum on that side of the fence. Thank you.
Understood, and thanks, Alan. Greg.
Greg Chatton, director.
Sorry, I've gone over Avery. The hands haven't moved. Apologies. Go ahead, Avery, and then we'll come to you, Greg.
Sorry.
Okay, thank you, although I would have waited. I was one of the ones that marked disagree, but I want to explain the disagreement. It had to do with the should be difficult. And I did put in a note that said there should be a stakeholder process to do it, but it does not need to be difficult. And so I'm really trying to differentiate between the notion that, you know, it should be very difficult to near impossible to change it, whereas, no, but there should be a proper bottom-up stakeholder-based process to change it. Now, the value judgment, is that difficult or is that an appropriate, you know, way to deal with it, maybe, you know, one we can have, but that was really my point, is that, no, we don't have to make it hard, we just have to have a proper process. Thank you.
All right, it'd be good to capture that in the notes, that concept of difficult and a proper process, because that's important. That, I mean, some might view, Avery, as you well know, which is what you've highlighted, the existence of a proper process as appropriately difficult. So that's key to highlight. Greg.
Thank you, Jonathan. Greg Chatton. I'm in violent agreement with Avery. I'm not sure how I answered exactly as to difficult or not, but I think I probably answered it should be difficult in the sense that what I thought would be easy would be for the MRT to change its own composition or mandate, and that what would be more difficult would be a proper multi-stakeholder bottom-up process to change it. One of the ambiguities is whether that's difficult or just appropriate. But what I wanted to avoid was kind of some sort of self-aggrandizing MRT that would, you know, change its own scope and its own composition to suit without dealing with a larger multi-stakeholder body. So
it shouldn't be
too difficult in the sense that it needs to be responsive to
conditions that the multi-stakeholder community sees,
but it shouldn't be a
change that can be
initiated without the multi-stakeholder community being the ultimate arbiter of such things.
Thanks, Greg. Let's take that as the constructive comment that we needed on that. If I can just make a note on the notes that it says the existence of a proper process is a difficulty. I think what that should say is something like is an appropriate difficulty, and with the difficulty in quote marks. I think that captures the point. Then
I could just add one other thing, which is to respond to Alan. I don't think that capture is necessarily any less of a problem in an internal solution than it is in an external, so-called external solution. I'm not even sure that the MRT is terribly different
in the two
solutions. I guess depending upon what the MRT itself looks like, capture could be more or less
of an issue,
relatively speaking, but I don't think it's based on whether it's internal or external, at least at the level of detail that we're operating at now. Thanks.
Okay, well, hopefully we'll pick that up in other discussions. Let's move ourselves on to the second survey, which is undoubtedly going to throw up some further interesting discussion. So the first question on that, so that survey is broken down into Contract Co., the Independent Review Panel, or IAP, also deals with a section on accountability. The section on accountability will bump to call four as a sort of precursor or part of call four, unless we make and also the internal to ICANN solution, of course. So let's work our way through the green items as we did previously, and then we'll come back onto the yellow items. So the first of those green points is point four, which says there should not be an IANA functions contract as part of the transition. Is that correct? Have I got something wrong there? I'm sorry.
Yeah, we are
17.
17. I'm sorry.
Apologies.
Yeah. So 17. Apologies. So it's item 17, which you see in front of you shortly, and that's whether contract code should be incorporated or not, and subject to a particular jurisdiction's laws, should be examined by a neutral, unaffiliated expert. The structure of contract code. So this clearly assumes contract co.
Jonathan, this is basic.
Yeah.
Greg Chapman, this is basically another do we need legal advice question about contract co and whether it should be incorporated and where. So really, again, the question probably should have been drafted backwards in terms of which the cause versus the effect should have come first in the question or the statement. But in any case, you know, this is similar to the question that we discussed yesterday about whether we needed outside legal advice on this subject. I think, you know, again, here the answer seems to be strongly yes.
Okay. Any comments on this, Chuck?
Thank you, Jonathan. And just a comment on the wording of the question. In hindsight, I think it would have been better to break it down into two questions. Should it be incorporated? And the second question being regarding the jurisdiction. That said, it may be safe to assume that the people that strongly agree and even find it acceptable might my guess is that they probably agree to both of those if they were separate sections, but that's just a comment on the design of the question.
Yeah, I must say, you're right, it's complicated and not that straightforward to read the wording. I would say that one of the strongest points that jumps out to me is they should be examined by a neutral, unaffiliated expert.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of overarching themes that we are not dealing with in these four sessions of the weekend, and one of them is the requirement to, and if so, how, to obtain independent and legal advice on the nature of on the solutions being proposed and drafted, and that's clearly something that needs further work and consideration. Robert, go ahead.
This is Robert for the record. I think as we step through the next couple of questions, I think we'll get more of a nuance in regards to some of the functions or the roles that this should do. So we suggest maybe that we go through those, and I think I'll take a look in advance, maybe instead of just going through the green ones and then the yellow ones, we may want to go in sequence because they're grouped. The second survey had the questions grouped together a lot more logically, and so we may want to go through the next couple of questions in just sequential order, and where there are ones that are yellow, just say these are yellow, and that might be particularly helpful.
Thanks, Robert. That does make sense, and we may even have touched on that in the previous discussion. So let's go to question 19. And I note the comment from Olivier, if you interpret the question as I suggested one might, the previous question is before we move on to 19, noting the comment from Olivier that there's highlighting that it does appear that there is strong support for independent legal advice, or as it's worded here, examination by a neutral, unaffiliated expert. Question 19. Contract Co. Should be extremely lightweight, and its purpose should be limited to holding contracts for the names community. There was little disagreement, some no responses, and most were in the unacceptable agree or strongly agree categories. Any comments or other points on this? Keep us moving, understanding that the participants are pretty quick on the trigger if they do feel like they need to make something be known. Again, this speaks to question 20, which is again green. In other words, there's a convergence of views on it. Is that the bylaws of contract code should narrowly and clearly limit its activities. There's no disagreement there. There's a couple of no responses, but essentially no disagreement. And Lisa, go ahead, Lisa.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's Lisa Fuhr for the record. I just noticed in the chat that there's been quite a few comments regarding the legal advice, and we as co-chairs just want to make clear that it is the plan to seek legal advice and we're working on it. We just want to be absolutely certain of what to ask. So this is in the plan and this is going to go very fast forward during the next couple of weeks. Thank you.
Yeah, so that scope of that advice is critical. It is the point, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. All right. Item 30, following Robert's suggestion, is in yellow, but
continues on the similar theme. The
29 also.
Is it
20? Don't worry about the coloring. That was one that was missed.
Okay. So thanks for capturing that, Chuck. So 29 should have been Robert.
Yeah, I just wanted to, what's not noticed here in the survey is that I think, just taking a look here, there were some comments, there was a comment section in between, I think just between 25 and 26. So if we're heading in that direction, going through them very quickly, I'll just say that we have a substantial number of comments, and some of them are related to the questions that are in green, yellow, or in white. There's questions in regards to jurisdiction, whether it should be in one country or another. Some talk about the universality of a jurisdiction in Switzerland, for example. But I'll just mention kind of three. There's the concern in regards to how this contract code would be constructed and if it could be captured in some capacity, and that needs to be looked at. That it should be lightweight, and that echoes some of the comments in the poll as well, that it should be well-defined. And there's still a lot of comments in regards to not being convinced that contract code is needed. And so I think we just need some definition, and we need to just really define its kind of independence, which is particularly important. And then the jurisdiction issue, I think, as you mentioned earlier, having some legal advice would be particularly helpful. So I just wanted to echo those comments. Thank you.
Yeah, that's helpful, Robert, and in particular, I mean, addressing the one point that relating to contract code, questioning the need for contract code. Well, clearly things have moved on since then in the sense that there is a supplementary subgroup of RFP3 going to look at an alternative that doesn't necessarily rely on contract code.
29 was the one, wasn't it? Yeah. So 29 goes in the other direction in the sense that generally we've been looking at results which produce where the balance of opinion is weighted in the strongly agree, and is acceptable category. Here it goes the other way in that the balance is strongly disagree and disagree are sufficient that they weight the outcome to be yellow in the negative, if you like. And this is that contract co should be responsible ensuring that route zone changes are in compliance with prevailing policy and pass that change along to the route zone maintainer. So this is disagreeing with that particular role of contract co. You've got a couple of questions. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. Were the comments helpful in suggesting if contract code doesn't do it, who should be doing it?
This is just Robert for the record. I just let me take a look again because they're just divided into different sections, so let me get back to you. While other people in queue have a chance, and then I'll come back. Thank you.
A couple of questions in the chat. One from Eduardo, who says he thinks we should be discussing questions 1 and 2 regarding the need for a contract code. Eduardo, we're specifically dealing with this in the same way as we have dealt with the others. To the extent that there isn't a strong view either way, there's clearly... We're looking for areas of convergence rather than divergence, and clearly the essence of 1 and 2 is that we know that this is the most divergent probably part of this working group's work, and that's going to be dealt with elsewhere. So for the moment we're looking at working on those areas of convergence. Then Sean asks about skipping some greens too. Did we skip some? He said, did we skip some? I think we're coming to those still, aren't we?
Yeah. That's going to be during the internal to ICANN, John.
Okay, Chuck, your hand is up.
Thanks, Jonathan. Yeah, I don't think we skipped any greens like Sean suggested, but 5 through 10 weren't marked in green. But the with regard to the question number 29 and the in the strongly disagree, I mean, we and really more in response to I think Alan's question is the nobody's suggesting that the root zone changes, if they're not in compliance with policy, shouldn't be addressed. But I think that the strong disagreement there is that contract companies should do it. So who should do that? My own personal opinion, if it's a policy issue, is that the policy development bodies should deal with that. And to the extent with CCPLDs, that gets a little more complicated, as we all know, and I won't go over that again, because it's not just CCNSO work, but also local law and so forth, and I don't want to go there right now. But the appropriate body, in my opinion, for dealing with violation of policy is not the MRT or the CSC or contract co, if there's a contract co, but rather the policy development body that developed the policy. So, now, that's my own personal view. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. Greg.
Greg Chatton here. I see this question is basically asking about the authorization function that's currently carried on by the NTIA. Those terms there indicate that, although it's implied and not explicit. And one of the things that the authorization function, as stated in the NTIA contract, requires is that ICANN, as the IANA function operator, self-certify that the actions are taking place are consistent with applicable policy. We could look at the actual section of the NTIA contract for the exact wording, but the point is that there is supposed to be a certification there that policy has been followed, assumably there may be some level of review of that by the NTIA. There may be no level of review of that. The self-certification may be taken on the honor system, but that's kind of out of scope of this question directly. So the question here is whether the contract co should take over the authorization function. That's the way I would read this. And to my mind, I disagreed with this because contract co itself is not supposed to be an active, to have a kind of an active body and staff doing work, and the authorization function would be quite active. Obviously, there are periods of greater and lesser activity. But the last thing we want to do is take a lightweight corporation, which is primarily exists to provide a kind of contractual arm to be wielded by the MRT and ultimately by the community, and all of a sudden give it a function that is as kind of day-to-day, or at least week-to-week, as the authorization function would be. So I thought this question was somewhat bizarre. It was taken directly from one of the public comments, and I think maybe the spirit of that comment was made initially was somebody needs to be doing this authorization function. We can't just drop it. We need to deal with as a group is the answer to that question or statement. And they were kind of suggesting that, well, we need the authorization function, and let's get contract co to do it, which I don't think is the right answer because I think it mutates the very concept of contract co as not having kind of a daily job to do.
So it seems that there's pretty strong disagreement with contract co having that function, but it doesn't answer the question of should the authorization function survive the transition, and if so, where should it reside? I also note there was a question from Steve Crocker in the chat. I'm just trying to relocate that question. What would be an example of, related to this question, what would be an example of route zone change not in accordance with policy? So I don't know if anyone has any answer to that, but Steve, I see you coming up in the queue anyway. Robert.
This is Robert for the record. I just very quickly went through the comments to try to answer Alan's comments, and we'll just in terms of different comments that were submitted. So I think there's four different comments here. So there was a mention of ISOC or ISTAR organizations being doing this. Another comment was a global council like NRO could be created to do. There was another comment in regards that it be a membership organization, but recognize the challenges because some of the survey results also have said that needs to be small and not recreate ICANN. And then in regards to jurisdiction, a variety of different countries were mentioned. There was the issue of universal jurisdiction. I think we should drill down more exactly what's meant by that, but I think we've had some discussions. And then several countries were mentioned, some saying keep it in the U.S., Switzerland, Canada, and also The Hague and the Netherlands was also mentioned. So I think the values here is where either it's been held before or where there are examples where there are trusted legal communities already exist. I'm trying to collate some of the questions for the next block of questions from 26 to 33, and prompted we'll try to summarize those as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert. That's helpful. Steve.
Thank you. So the question that I put in the online was, we're talking about what happens if there's a if IANA makes a change that's not in accordance with the policy, and I thought it would be helpful, it certainly would be helpful to me to understand what's an example that we have in mind here, because I don't have a ready example in my head that helps understand the context of what we're talking about. And let me add a comment about the clause in the current version of the IANA contract. In brief, I felt that that clause, which was inserted, was extremely troublesome. It was well-intentioned as an attempt to try to isolate IANA from participating, or it was part of the other language as well, that tried to isolate IANA from participating in policy issues and also, with respect to this particular language that was quoted, to make sure that all the changes followed whatever policies there were. But operationally, it was extremely confusing as to what it means, and I'm not aware of any particular implementation of it that made any sense at all. I thought it was a misbegotten piece of language. So I would counsel this group not to take it as meaningful in its own right, and therefore let's just copy it over and include it. I would counsel that if we're going to try to include something like that, that it's incumbent on this group to try to understand what was meant, because at least to my in my view, that language was essentially meaningless, confusing, and should be reexamined afresh.
Thanks, Steve. And just going back then to the point prior and relating to 29, just the sort of genesis of the statements that were tested in these surveys is to remind me and possibly yourself and others, I don't know, that we had the draft document, we had the public comments, and the opportunity with the survey was to test some of the assertions or comments coming in via the public comment with the CWG. So it's closing the loop from the public comments back to the CWG. So this 29, for example, contract host should be responsible for ensuring that route zone changes are in compliance with prevailing policy and then pass that change along to the route zone maintained to be implemented is not necessarily an assertion of someone in the CWG. It's an assertion that's come through via the public comment, which is being tested against the CWG to say, is this reasonable or not. And frankly, what's happened in being tested against the CWG in the survey, on balance, it's got a yellow level of disagreement. So just to make sure we're all clear on where this is coming from.
So I appreciate that. I just even if it came through the public comment, there is a presumption on many people that whatever's in the contract is a good baseline to work with, and that a reasonable approach is to say, well, NTIA issued a contract. We don't have NTIA. We need somebody else to issue a contract. And as a starting point, we'll assume that the contract should be identical or used as a base with the existing contract. And I'm raising a flag here that general approach, although it's plausible, in this particular instance, I felt was troublesome because it was confused and from its outset, and so I don't know who made the public comments. I didn't follow it that closely, but it's not. I wouldn't take it as a sensible thing just on its own, just because it existed in the contract, even if it got commented on in the public comments.
Yes, Stephen, thank you. That's a very good point. That to just challenge that the validity of the baseline of existing contract, and that shouldn't necessarily be seen as the most sensible baseline. So that's a useful point to make, and I get that, and I'm sure others do as well. That's helpful. Greg, is your hand up?
With apologies, let me just one thing. Let me say for the record, the board had no ability to interact during the contract process. So the board has been as much outside, pretty much on the contract as the rest of the public. So my comments here are not from a defensive point of view, trying to defend ICANN or anything. One might expect that we have been on the inside of all of this, but it's simply not the case that NTI held that process very, very close to themselves, and the dynamics are not what one would, at least what I would think would have been sensible.
Thanks, Steve. Greg.
Greg Shatton. A couple of different thoughts in response to that. You know, first, I think there is somewhat of a bias toward a rebuttable presumption. In the ICG's RFP, the presumption is toward keeping the same thing, or at least when we change something, the RFP says, if your community is proposing to replace one or more existing arrangements with new arrangements, that replacement should be explained, and your community should provide its rationale and justification for the new arrangement. So kind of implicit in that is if you're keeping things the same, you don't necessarily need a rationale and justification for that. Nonetheless, I would say that that's a very rebuttable presumption, and certainly I don't think we're going to we certainly haven't been taking everything as if we're trying to keep change as little as possible.
Yeah.
Everything is up for consideration. I think that, you know, in this particular case, the intent of that, as I see it, and this is certainly no place, you know, try to renegotiate the IANA functions contract, since there may not even be one, but maybe the well-intentioned part of that was to look for at least an acknowledgement that policy had been followed when a delegation, for instance, or redelegation was being, you know, put to the NTIA for its final authorization. And I think we all need to think about whether there's a way for that intention, if we agree with that intention, or if there's consensus or convergence on that intention, is there another way to accomplish it, or is it not even part of the process, and that's just going to be resolved within ICANN, and everything after that is just a mechanical process, and that when it arrives at the root zone maintainer's desk, they're just going to assume policy is followed, and there's no other body that is even trying to even take in a self-certification that policy was followed. And So I think maybe the intent here was to try to capture rogue delegations.
With apology, Greg, thank you very much. That's a very helpful. I think it gets right to the core of what the IANA function is, because if you postulate that there has to be some way of continuing the notion that the IANA operation is going to cross-check or double-check whether policy has been followed, then you put the IANA group in the middle of trying to interpret what policy is, and then they have to have the expertise and the internal governance and authorization, essentially the enablement to do all of that. The alternative model, which is what I think is a much better picture of what we want the IANA function to be, is that it is that it essentially follows orders. And that the real focus is, does it do so correctly, accurately, efficiently, quickly, and so forth? And that if there's an issue with whether the order was a proper order, that the place to sort that out is upstream when the order was created, and by whatever mechanisms are appropriate with that. So that that's a very important line in my view. And it's one of the things which, despite their best efforts, and I know they've been very well-intentioned in this, I think, frankly, the NTIA folks have actually created more confusion than they've solved. And my perspective on this is that one of the things I'm looking for in the transition is greater clarification and transparency as to what the IANA function is and what it is not. I think that would be helpful for everybody.
If I could just briefly respond to that, I think the IANA functions operator itself, I would agree, should not be getting involved in policy or measuring whether policy has been followed or an implementation of policy has been followed. I think it's where the IANA stewardship function gets involved, that there's a question of whether policy has been followed, and that really gets to the kind of accountability question we'll be discussing on the next call.
Okay, thanks, Greg. Thanks, Steve. That's, I hope, a helpful initial discussion. I know Alan is in the queue, and I'm very keen. I'm conscious that we've time's moving, and we've got a lot of substance to get through to try and make the progress we intended to. Alan, if you could come in, and then we'll move on to the next point.
Thank you. I'll be quick. Steve's comment is both enlightening, the original comment, both enlightening and disturbing, that we shouldn't take every clause in the contract as essentially gospel that we have to replicate. That says we probably should have, or the ICG should have a long time ago, asked, are there any clauses which really don't make any sense, either from NTIA's point of view or ICANN's point of view or IANA's point of view, and maybe that's something we need to put on a to-do list to make sure. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Did we capture that? Grace? Okay, good. Let's keep moving then from 29 through to 30. We're still only on section one of, I think, three sections we need to try and deal with in this call. So I'm going to probably have to pick up the pace a little. Separation of IANA function and removal from ICANN should be seen as a last resort. This comes through as a yellow. There's quite a lot of strong agreement, and then a dispersal of agree is acceptable, disagree, and strongly disagree. As I said, I'm going to pick the pace up, so I'm going to look for you to be hot on the button if you want to comment on any of these, both in terms of any comments about why you might have disagreed or any detail you'd like to see happen here. It's notwithstanding the fact that this is not green, it seems pretty clear. Robert?
I just maybe wanted to add a bit of nuance. So the question asked should be seen as a last resort, but no steps in between. So that may be something that there may be some remediation, there may be some back and forth, and that may go to some of the other comments as well, too. So I'm not sure if a question related to that was asked, but it's only asking kind of in terms of a nuclear option. And I think maybe some of the variation in the answers here may suggest that there's a a continuum, and a last resort is removal, but some other actions are helpful.
That's a good point. So if anyone would like to speak to that, that in terms of their answers, that, that may be helpful. Let me keep us moving forward then on to number 32. Now, 32 says circumstances for re-awarding the IANA function contract should be limited to issues of non-performance relating to the IANA function, such as a failure to execute established service level agreements or non-adherence to contract terms. This is a pretty key point. And it's obviously come up as green, which means the scope is pretty well defined for the basis on which re-awarding the contract should be considered. Alan?
I don't think Milton is here to argue it at this point, which is unfortunate. Yesterday in the chat, I believe he said that there's no conflict between this one and the fact that it should be periodic RFPs. And I find them very much in conflict, that there's no point in doing an RFP unless you're prepared to change vendors. And this one says we should only be changing if there is a problem. And I think as we go forward with this proposal, we need clarity on that. I'm not sure this is the right time to get it, but I wanted to raise that. Thank you.
Yeah, I remember that issue coming up a little in Frankfurt as well, Alan, so we can take note of that and see if there is, make sure that we need to resolve whether or not those are coherent points. Greg.
I just point out that I think question 31 kind of gets to that point that Alan's making, which asks, that regular periodic periodic rebidding processes of the IANA function contract could provide for greater stability and predictability. And that appears to be kind of split as to what people thought on that question. Maybe it's not all that helpful. But I think one of the questions we haven't really gotten to was, should RFP be mandatory at the end of each contract term? So that's no question whether those are all related or not. I think it's still something to be further resolved. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Well, what we it is clear that the outcome of 32 is a green outcome, a relatively clear outcome, whereas you're right, 31, which considers the periodic rebidding, doesn't give that level of clarity. Robert?
There are some comments related to this in the comment section, but I just take off my hat and maybe add some comments of my own. I think maybe with the questions that we're touching on, particularly 31 now, is we may want to try to drive at, since we're kind of in the periodic rebidding or RFPs is something where there is a kind of a middle ground view or there isn't a clear view, is that what are we getting out of that? Is it to keep put pressure on whoever the operator is or some other things, and we should try to tease out that because that would be something that we may want to discuss in the accountability section, whether it's to promote innovation, service level agreements, and so there's some value to keep the sentiment of that question alive and discuss it further. So that's one thing. So in regards to the comments, maybe three quick comments in regards to from questions 26 to 33, which cover the area we're in now, is that it should be a contracting entity and not a contract enforcement entity, that rebidding should take place every 3 to 6 years, and in case of dissatisfaction or not, it puts pressure on it, and whether that should be covered by accountability. And there's also a comment that creating any alternatives to the existing system would create considerable disruption. And so there's a worry to the security and stability, and so something should be close to the existing system, but yet provide the stability and some of the features that perhaps the RFPs or that pressure allows for innovation or allows for service levels to be maintained. And so those are key principles or values to think about. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert. And just to answer the question from Sean in the chat about the sequence, we are going through this in dealing with the greens and yellows at a time. 29 was not marked, which is why I dealt with it. It was not marked properly. It should have been green or yellow. I can't quite tell right now. I think it should have been
yellow.
And 31 was referred to in the discussion on 30, which is why we touched on it. All right. We're going to move now on to the section known as internal to ICANN. And we have an item one, which is or question one. Adequate accountability mechanisms are in place, and ICANN internal option should be adopted. This met the yellow threshold, and so that's interesting. And Avery, go ahead.
Okay. Yes, thank you. This is Avery. On this whole section, and then specifically on this question, I ended up, and this is again operating as from my understanding of where NCSG might be on this one, is I marked 1, 3 through 5, and 8 as no response. So, and the reason for the no response is because of the need to see the details of an internal solution in order to evaluate any of these questions that sort of, you know, say, you know, that there would be adequate and what it would look like, and before saying that it would, to say you would strongly agree or disagree with an unknown is impossible. Now, unfortunately, no response feeds into, you know, agreement looking even stronger. But how can you disagree with something you don't see? The other ones were all accountability issues. 2, 6, 7, and 9 were all accountability solutions that seemed to pertain whether there was an internal or external solution in terms of ICANN and its whole, you know, accountability process. So, and they seem to be things that the accountability CCWG should consider, and part of our, you know, cross-community working group accountability issue. And by the way, I'm really sorry I'll miss the next meeting because I'm traveling, because I'm very much paying attention to what we're doing on the accountability group. But anyway, so I just wanted to point out that a no response here was because we really don't have any basis yet, especially based on the survey, to make these judgments. And I just, you know, we really need to see more to say we can agree or disagree. Thank you.
So just, I just got this, I noticed that there was a question, thanks Avery for that point, and I noticed related to that there was also a question about an update on RFP3B work. I think Alan did say something yesterday, but I'll ask him to just say something now, just as a reminder of what's intended, because it does relate directly to the questions in this part of the survey.
Thank you, Jonathan. This is Alan McGilvish for the record. I have agreed to be the coordinator for RFP3B, and I'm pleased to have a large number of volunteers on the list to participate in this group. It's our intention that the list for RFP3B would be the same list as for RFP3 itself, which in turn is the same list as the whole group, because it's so important and it's central to the work that we're doing. I have not yet consulted with Grace on the scheduling of the first meeting, but it's really my hope to do it on Tuesday or Wednesday of this week. I really want to think about it a bit and maybe even try and present a straw man. I know a couple of people in the community are doing the same thing now. I think it would be much better if we had something to look at to focus the discussion. And so that's the plan, Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, subject to Grace finding us a slot.
Alan, there's a follow-up question in the chat which says, is RFP3B exploring all alternative proposals brought up in the public comment or only the ALAC option?
As I explained in the email I sent out to the list, it's my working proposal that we would focus on options that do not include a contract code. So I don't want to say that's the ALAC option because AUDA has, for example, made some proposals in this respect. I noticed that the registry option does include a contracting entity, and at least it's not my intention to at least initially look at that. This is really looking, I think there was a kind of a locus of view around an option that does not include a contracting entity, so that I propose will be the focus of the work of RFP3B.
Thanks, Alan. All right, let's get back to the queue then. And Avery does note that that's made part of answering this part of the survey difficult in that there were several options, and so the internal solution isn't clear. What shape that had. Alan Greenberg, go ahead.
Thank you. A number of points. First of all, to counter Avery, I read this question. This question starts with, if adequate accountability mechanisms are in place, I took that as a premise, which I could not doubt, and therefore answered the question based on the premise. Yes, each of us judge adequately ourselves, but I was told there were adequate accountability, and I answered it in that context. So I'm not quite sure what Avery's confusion was or reason for not being sure. With regard to the question of the ALAC proposal being addressed, the ALAC proposal made it very clear at the start that we are not wedded to any of the details other than a few principles, which included the first of which is there is no contract co. So the ALAC proposal is the generic one when you factor that into place, and we certainly are not going to press for any of the specific details when we're looking at a solution that meets all needs. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Olivier?
Thank you, Jonathan. Olivier Capard, now speaking. Just a quick question on logistics. Alan McGillivray mentioned using the same list. So that's, I believe, is the RFP3 mailing list that would be used for these discussions with it. Because I have seen some strong objections to that, and some people saying, well, we could make up another list that would have exactly the same people on it, but that would then, because we've got these two proposals, we could actually then use automatic filtering rules so as to put them in different folders in our computers, in our mailbox.
Thanks, Olivia. Grace, did you want to speak?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that indeed it was the plan was to use the same mailing list as RFP3.
With no distinction by
correct.
Category B or not.
Right, and RFP3 and the RFP3 mailing list and the CWG stewardship mailing list have exactly the same people. It's a copy of the same list, essentially.
Will there be any basis on which to filter those? Marika?
This is Marika. If people in there make a habit of in their title subject line very clearly indicate whether they're talking 3A or 3B, of course, that makes it easy for people to scan whether they want to read it or respond.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It's just creating a whole separate mailing list does have a lot of admin hurdles that we need to go through to set that up, and as an other mailing list is already in place and has indeed exactly the same people on it, we're hoping that the inconvenience of just skimming through and indeed, as I said, people make a habit of clearly identifying in the habit in the subject headline, whether it's 3A or B, that will hopefully be sufficient for people to make that selection, whether they need to read it or not.
Okay, I'm going to keep moving us through the points here, as encouraged by my co-chair and my own sentiments. All right, so we dealt with question one. Question two, we didn't do question two yet. Adequate accountability mechanisms in an ICANN internal option could include the possibility of removing the IANA
functions from ICANN, which gets a green ranking. Item 5 in yellow, an ICANN internal solution would be cheaper to implement off-base than the contract co option. That's a tough one to judge, I imagine, but nevertheless, sufficient number did to give it a yellow position. I think that obviously, self-evidently, in my view at least, depends on the nature of the solution and the detail of that. It's quite clear that at least quite a few view that that's a likely outcome. Olivier and Alan? Olivier first.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jonathan. It's Olivier here. Did we say that green was beyond 75%? Because this one should be green, I think. I've just done the sum, and it looks at 76% looking at the current percentages.
Question 5.
As to explain.
Robert is going to respond and explain that, please.
Sure. So let me just a little bit more information in regards to number 5. There was an issue in regards to the percentage non-responses, so I'll post that in the chat after these comments. The way I calculated the percent agree, percent disagree, is percent agree is I lumped together completely agree, and is acceptable. For percent disagree is the disagreeing completely disagree and did not include the non-responses. So in regards to question number 5, there is an 86.6% agreement, 13.3% disagreement, and the difference between them is 73%. So that's not higher than 75, and so it's flagged as yellow, not.
Thanks, Robert. Alan, you're next.
Yeah, thank you. I would just referring to, I think, your comment on it, it's not clear. It's hard to determine whether it is going to be more expensive or not. Since we have a whole entity which we have to fund, and there are going to be costs associated with it, it's hard for it not to be more expensive. The question is, is it going to be substantively more expensive so that it matters? In my mind,
thanks.
Anyway.
Thanks, Alan. That's helpful, and it's a fair response. All right, I'm going to Avery, you disagree in the chat? I'm just not sure. Do you disagree that is that on the call?
Yes, I was disagreeing. I was disagreeing with Alan's point that you take one unknown and then you take another where there's the creation of an institution, and that therefore shows we have no idea what sort of internal structures would need to be added, what sort of support would need to be added within an internal solution, taking into account all the accountability measures that would need to be in place to support it, that it indeed ends up cheaper. It's basically saying, we don't know anything about B, but we know a little bit about A. Well, you know, so that is obviously more expensive, and I can't agree with that, and that's why I put up the disagree flag. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Avery. That's clear. And so what's clear is that the respondents of the survey thought it would be cheaper, and there are some comments too, and I see there's some support in the chat that question whether we can that that's a reasonable point to have at this stage. I don't think we can resolve much more at this point. There's going to be more work done on that in the very near future, and we can deal with it then. Item point 6 was that an ICANN internal solution should include a mechanism where IANA functions can be removed from ICANN for cause related to IANA functions
and contracted out to a third party, which passed the green threshold test. So it seems to have a broad convergence of views there. Item 7 asserted that an ICANN internal solution should provide that contract code can be created if necessary in order to carry out the IANA functions. So this looks at an ICANN internal solution and then the possibility of creating a contract code under certain conditions, and this doesn't get the green threshold but has a yellow threshold level of support. So it's kind of contract code on the shelf, as it were, ready to deploy. Keeping us moving then to item 9, the next item that received us I suppose this acts as guidance for Alan McGillifrey and others working on 3B to take this as in effect a certain level of initial input, these points to your work. Item 9, an ICANN internal solution should include a mechanism where multi-stakeholder community may remove ICANN directors or entire board for cause under specific circumstances related to IANA functions. Visually, this looks pretty dispersed. Technically, it passed the yellow level of test. Feels to me like this is something for accountability, but maybe the perception of the survey is that it, at least. Any comments? Okay, so that...
Steve Crocker has his hand in the...
Steve, sorry, I didn't see that. I was looking away from the screen. Steve, go ahead.
Apologies. I empathize with what's going on there, but I think if one tries to think through how are you going to remove ICANN directors, doesn't that get at the issue of general accountability of ICANN overall? And if you postulate that there's a very specific pathway for removing a director because of an issue with respect to IANA, how do you sort that out compared to all other reasons why you might want to remove a director? I understand the... impetus and the impulse to think about how can one hold the directors more accountable or make them more responsive or deal with them if you think they're not behaving properly. But I don't see how to, and there's a lot of issues associated with that, but I don't see how to provide a very specific pathway related to IANA that is not tangled up with all of the other reasons that one might want to deal with the ICANN board. So, I understand the results of this, but question, I just raised the question that if you want to pursue this somehow and put this into a proposal, that the kind of question I'm asking is one that will have to come up in terms of taking it as ask the question, well, how would you implement this and how would it actually play out? My own view is that this isn't the right place for this question. I mean, this question should be pursued as part of accountability overall. But even if you choose to pursue it within this, you're going to have an issue of how it relates to the overall accountability questions.
Just to remind others that part of the work we are going to do as in this working group, and indeed have been at least asked to help with by the accountability working group, is to provide specific hooks, points, and links from our work into the work of the accountability group. So this might well be a pointer in that direction. Greg.
Greg Shatton for the record. Just to point out that the question is kind of buried in the middle of a fairly long statement, is that this refers to removal of directors or the board only for specific circumstances relating to the IANA function. So this goes to, as we discussed yesterday, there are different layers or tranches of accountability, and one is accountability for the operational of the IANA function, and this and that's supposed to fall into this group. Clearly, there could be a circumstance where it's decided. I'm not saying that this would or should happen, but it's decided that the only reason that one should remove ICANN board directors is for problems with the IANA function, and that there's no other reason to remove directors. Case, that really does fall within this group's mandate and not the accountability group's mandate. It may be that the accountability group comes up with a broad, general process for removing directors based on a variety of different, significantly terrible occurrences, and that this, in terms of implementation, could be folded into their process. Indeed, I think it should be. You don't want to have two inconsistent processes arrive at the same result. But from the point of view of the concept of removing directors for IANA performance problems, that's our job.
Thanks, Greg.
Just a quick comment. Whenever you put a mechanism like that together, you have to consider that it may get that the various parties may attempt to use it for motives that are not 100% aligned with the intention. So if somebody has a problem with the director, they may seek any and all mechanisms to remove that director, even if they're off target. So you could have an attempt to remove a director for IANA performance when there's no IANA performance issue or not one above threshold, and then unless it would burden the system to deal with that. And you can see where I'm going with all that. All subside.
I guess abuse is always a problem with any mechanism you have to try to control for.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Greg. I see there's a queue that exists at present with four people in it, Alan, Avery, Chuck, and Steve, and I'm going to call it a day at that point to try and spend the last 15 minutes looking at the IAP section. So, Alan, Avery, and Chuck, if you could be brief, and then we'll move on. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I'll be very brief. Greg said basically what I was going to say, that this was our requirement. I would expect an accountability group to come up with a more generalized one, and hopefully one that will address the kinds of concerns that Steve has. But this was only what we needed to do this particular job. Thank you.
Yeah, agreed and understood. So that to the extent that this group can be holistic in our thinking and provide conditional hooks, I think that gets the desired outcome, but potentially passes this across the CWG group, CCWG on accountability, that could be very helpful in making a holistic outcome. But let's tackle that in the next meeting, the next call four. Avery, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Avery speaking. And unfortunately, as I say again, I'm going to miss session four. But one of the things this brings out is that different solution paths have different demands on the accountability structure. And that perhaps that is one of the things that 3B and also 3A needs to do, is to differentiate and to list what indeed their accountability requirements are for the solution. And one of the things that will have to be taken into account is then looking at the degree of change, the degree of extra accountability mechanisms that need to be created at ICANN may unfold from one decision or another. So that's a part of the picture we will need. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a helpful contribution. Thanks, Avery. That's useful. Chuck.
Thanks. Two points. First of all, in considering how the board is or is not involved with regard to specific IANA actions and what happens there, it seems like the board really isn't very involved. So if we're restricting this particular idea to just IANA activities, it's not clear to me that there's a close relationship. Now, I raise that and say, well, if this idea is considered further within the CWG or in the CCWG, then I think that needs to be looked at. Now, in the broader sense of the CCWG, it seems to make more sense, which others have, I think, indicated as well, than it does here. But secondly, I want to say that I'm not sure I want, and this is purely personal, I haven't talked about this statement with anyone, I'm not sure I want a board member making a decision based on a threat of removal on one specific action. Maybe a trend of actions would be a different thing, but on one specific action, I would rather they make a decision based on public interest and the overall value of the situation. So, again, that's strictly a personal view. I throw that out just with regard to this issue. I personally think this is more of the CCWG issue than it is.
Thanks, Chuck. I'll refrain from commenting myself and move us straight on to the next section, which is the final section we want to try and cover in this meeting, and that is dealing with the IAP. The first question being question one, which has passed the threshold test. For green. And that is to say there should be standard procedures for catching IANA process errors before resorting to an appeals process. No disagreement on that. Varying levels of agreement, but no disagreement. Item 2 is yellow. Although when you look at it visually, it looks pretty balanced. Although this is removing the no responses, you can see why it comes out yellow. Existing arbitration providers should be used instead of creating a new body. Alan.
Just a question. Was there ever really any discussion about using a new body? In the discussions I recall, we were talking about things like the ICC and other groups that are in the business of arbitration.
Does anyone remember where this came from in terms of the survey, what the genesis of this particular question was?
If I could interrupt, it's Greg Shatton for the record. This was in the original CWG proposal that there could be a new body, but in any event, that body would use goals that are set forth by a group like the ICC or AAA or the like. So there was a thread there potentially of that. I'm not sure to what extent the comments, anybody specifically suggested that a new body be taken. There were some comments along the way that the ICC may not have done the best job, or at least certainly didn't do the cheapest job of being an arbiter in the objections process for the GTLDs. So that may be one of the reasons why discussion of body, but what came up.
Thanks. Item 3.
a mechanism for an affected party to appeal a decision relating to the root zone would be beneficial for internet stakeholders and consumers. Steve? Steve, go ahead.
Sorry, I was on mute. So again, let me raise the question of whether or not this is within scope or not. It's a question of whether or not this is a proper thing for the IANA function, or whether or not those decisions, which are made elsewhere, upstream, if you will, should be appealed upstream.
Any comments, questions relating to the scope of this relative to the charter of the group or any other point? I've got hands up from Chuck, Robert, and Alan, so go ahead, Chuck.
Well, I guess my feeling is that a GTLD registry operator, and let me restrict it to GTLDs because, again, it gets more complicated with Cs, and that's really their issue, not ours, but meaning the Gs. I think if a decision, if a delegation decision for a GTLD is denied and there is belief that policy wasn't properly followed, for example, the new GTLD process, that operator should have a right to challenge that decision. And I recognize, Steve, that that's not a decision made by IANA, but this goes more back to the stewardship role that NTIA played, I think, where there was some recourse, however indirect or whatever, in case policy was not followed. So I do believe it is in scope, but not because IANA made a particular decision, because I understand the IANA team doesn't do that.
So Chuck, there's no question that if you're unhappy as a G, that if there's a decision made, you should have an appeal process. The issue in my mind is that the notion that NTI stewardship is related to the IANA as related to the IANA function is relevant here. This is exactly where I think there needs to be some sorting out of what is and what isn't IANA. And if there's an issue about recourse for G decisions, then no question that that's a relevant worth sorting out. But there are obviously places to sort that out, and entangling IANA in that seems to be exactly the wrong thing to do.
Thanks, Steve. Chuck again, and I'm really not trying to tangle IANA in it at all. But I don't think we're far apart. I guess what we're really talking about is where should it be handled, and if the accountability working CCWG didn't cover this, I would want it to be covered in our group, and we're not going to know that until we see what happens there, because I do think, and it sounds like you're saying the same thing, there should be a means to deal with that. So in that part, I think we're agreeing. Thanks.
Thanks, Chuck.
Yeah, and to start, just to start that discussion, isn't there already plenty of mechanism to do that? I'm not looking for an answer to that. Just posting that, if one wants to pursue that one has to examine what the recourse mechanisms are that exist within the contracting process and appeals process over in the Global Domains Division. Thank you.
And certainly reminding all participants in this CWG that we I'm very keen to see us produce the relevant and appropriate hooks and guidance into the related work of the CCWG on accountability. And so I'll be looking for us to produce those and give clear as clear assistance to that group as we can. Alan Greenberg, go ahead.
Thank you very much. My recollection of the origin of the whole appeals process was not that people had a long list of grievances that were not addressed before, but that there was a feeling that
for a level of comfort, we needed an appeal process going forward, not being sure whether it would actually ever be used or not, but there should be such a process. And I think that that was the origin of it. And I know from my point of view, in any case, at the very least, there might be the need for the equivalent of an injunction type process to halt an IANA change if indeed, you know, there was a dispute going on. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Alan. I've got Donna and Lisa, and then we'll move on to the next question. Donna.
Thanks, Jonathan. Donna Austin. I think I accept Chuck's point with regard to new GTLDs, but I also accept Steve's as well. And I think the thing that makes it quite different for G's, particularly the new GTLDs, is that a contract is actually signed some time before it gets to the IANA delegation process. So any problems with a new GTLD should have been sorted out much before it gets into the IANA basket. So I'm not sure, I'm not 100% sure that there is the necessity for an appeals mechanism that would be related to new GTLDs as it relates to the root zone. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Donna. Lisa?
At this point, I'm speaking as a member of the CC community, and I kind of sense that within the CC community there is it's divided, but some of the CCs are asking for a cheap, fast, and independent appeals panel, and independent is also a key issue here, because as far as I recall, a lot of those appeals mechanisms are mostly within ICANN, and having an outside ICANN appeals panel would be preferable. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. I'm noting that we're coming very close to the top of the hour, but we have the opportunity to complete the work on the section, and I'm going to ask your indulgence, everyone on the meeting, to stay for no more than 15 minutes to try and conclude this part. I'm sorry we have run to the edge of the planned hour, but I think it'll be very useful if we can nail this so that we've got a clean start on accountability at the next meeting. So number four, Don, is that a new hand? Let me come to you if that's a new hand. Oh, that's great, thank you. So item four, then, appeals should be managed differently depending on whether the appeal involves a GTLD or CCTLD, and that passed the green threshold. So there was pretty strong support for that, percentage difference being 92%. Item five talks about the terms of reference for the IAP, and details on the composition of the panel should be defined. Again, green threshold, approximately 87%. Item six, less strong, IAP component of the IANA CWG proposal is crucial, and its location outside of both ICANN and IANA oversight is necessary. Again, just to remind you, any reasons if you were in disagreement here, in other words, your disagreement stop this from being yellow, from being green as opposed to yellow. Any motivations or reasons for that? It's never bad for the group to hear and understand why that was the case, or indeed if for whatever reason you might have moved on from that position since filling in the survey. Eduardo, go ahead.
Yeah, this is a lot for the record. Jonathan, what are we doing here? Are we looking at the green ones, or are we looking at the greens and the yellow ones? Because I see on the right side that this one's been put as in convergence, but I mean it's in green. So I know what we're doing. Thank you. You can clarify.
Robert, can you help me there? Did you hear Eduardo's question?
I didn't. Can
Eduardo, if you could just repeat that for Robert, and perhaps he can assist here as well.
Yeah. Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes. No problem.
Okay, my question is what are we doing now? Because I thought we were looking for convergence, and this one, number six, for example, is a yellow one, and it's been put right side on the notes that is a convergent. That we're converging on that one, even though this is a yellow one. Thank you.
Okay, let me explain, Eduardo. Yesterday what we did was, with survey one, was we went through all the greens first and then the yellows second. The subtle difference today is that because we believe that the questions are, if you like, better organized or better structured in terms of their sequence, we are going through yellow and green simultaneously. That's why it is jumping between yellow and green. So strong convergence and weaker convergence as represented by green and yellow. I've got Grace and Robert potentially responding to this.
Yeah, this is Marika. We've marked in the notes as well at the top of each heading that it's green items, areas of convergence, unless marked differently. And for each of those questions that were marked yellow, we've noted so in the notes in the bracket behind each question.
Okay. So the notes highlight whether the item was yellow or green, effectively.
Right. And let me just also add, it's just one of the lessons learned in doing...
Thank you.
Eduardo, going from poll number one to poll number two, one of the constructive comments was that it was important to, instead of having very large sections, to break them up by logical questions. And so that, as I mentioned earlier this morning, that because the questions are more logically arranged in the second survey as opposed to the first, it might be worthwhile to go through the yellow and the greens together to see whether there's convergence or whether the questions can give us some sentiment that's a bit more nuanced than going through. So that's the difference in the survey caused, I guess, us to go through both of the type of questions now. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert. So the next point that receives the yellow level, the yellow threshold test, I note is not marked on the on the spreadsheet that you received, and that's number nine, question nine, and it's yellow in the negative, if you like. There was a sufficient threshold of disagreement to mark it yellow in the negative, although it isn't marked on the spreadsheet you've got, and that is that an appeal mechanism is not needed, and there was disagreement on that. In other words, the converse is true. An appeal mechanism is needed. Item 10. Crop moves across the page. The grounds for an appeal should be limited to whether or not relevant policy was followed. This passes a yellow test, perhaps somewhat surprisingly. I don't know if anyone who disagreed with this would like to speak up. I think this is probably a relatively important point to understand why people disagreed with this. Steve?
Well, the same thing that I've said before, it has to have a clear definition of what is policy and what does it mean to try to sort out whether or not policy was followed. This is I think a very important there have to be appeal mechanisms if you think the decisions are wrong, but equally I think it's absolutely vital that the IANA function be protected from this, that this is not an IANA issue. This is an issue that is who makes the decisions and what's the basis for making the decisions for the changes that are going to be published through the IANA function. The IANA function is a publication mechanism, in effect, not a decision-making process.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. And that was why my personally I was slightly surprised that this wasn't more strong in only received a yellow threshold. Alan.
Thank you. I've always read this as very much a lowercase policy, which implies policy, practices, rules. You know, if IANA decides to change the root zone entry without having been directed to do so and has it published, that's a violation of policy, lowercase policy. So I read this as very much policy slash something, not uppercase policy that's been decided by the GNSO or the CCNSO.
Okay, well,
I can tell you that if IANA were going to change the root zone without having been properly instructed to do so, the speed of the reaction would be blindingly fast, and this whole mechanism of having appeals and external processes would not have a chance to come into play. The results would be overwhelming and instantaneous.
Perhaps less so if what they changed was a contact name or number. Or I'm giving examples, not saying how often this is going to happen. That was my understanding of the intent of this, not necessarily a capital policy.
But nevertheless, Alan, that's a useful illustration as to the fact that the question may have been interpreted differently, and that might be why there's some less clarity in the outcome that one might have expected.
Indeed.
Bertrand?
Yeah, just a brief attempt at clarification. I think here we're talking about two different things. As Steve said, the IANA function is a clerical publishing function. And I think the appeal regarding the IANA function itself should be limited to questions of procedure, because today that's what NTIA does. It verifies that the procedure has been followed. And I think that I could agree with what Steve said earlier, that if it is related to a policy decision, i.e. to decide to enter a new GTLD, for instance, in the route or so, it is a separate process and it's another type of appeal. I think here we're more talking in the IANA function per se as whether relevant procedures were followed or not. It is not in the IANA appeal mechanism per se to basically become an appeal regarding the decision of putting a new GTLD in the route, for instance, or doing a redelegation. That's my understanding.
Thanks, Bertrand, for that clarification. I've got Robert and then Lisa, and then I'm going to nudge us on to the next question.
I just wanted to flag that sort of regards to this section, we're in the summary of results, which I will try to cover a couple of them right now. Two of them are a particular note, which is that the interest for an appeal could be related to errors not corrected or other customer service issues that are specific to a specific registry that don't rise to the level of policy exception. It could be to correct documentation that is wrong. And so there's kind of a technical administrative correction role that's here that's not necessarily policy. And so there's that nuance that's there. And then there was another comment as well, too, that for these type of questions, it's very important to understand what IANA does, the clerical function, and what it does not do. And so I think that's where I get that the comments are very much helpful in that regard. And if we are annotating what's possible and not, definitely the clerical correction or other type of non-policy exception, but issues need to be addressed as well.
Thanks, Robert. Lisa, last word to you, and then we'll move on.
Thank you. Lisa Poole for the record. I agree with Steve that it's very important to conclude what is relevant policy, but apart from that, I can imagine situations where you have IANA not doing anything. I know if there is a change, that would create a fast reaction, but you can also imagine IANA postponing doing a change because of certain issues and dragging this for months. And I think it's very important to have an appeal mechanism that can really shortcut if you are experiencing this. Thank you.
So the fault would be not acting rather than acting in error or in not in accordance with policy.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Nudging us forward then to item number 11. All decisions and actions of IANA functions operator that affect third parties and impact the root zone or root zone who is database should be subject to an independent appeals process. That's a more mixed response as to whether the scope of appeals is over all.
That's not
the only
one.
I'm sorry. Is that an error? I've gone to 11 instead of 12. Apologies. 11 is white, actually. That's Yeah, sorry. Yeah, sorry. So 12, forgive me there. I was switching between documents and screen. So 12, the appeals process should only challenge whether established policies have been properly applied for or adhered to by IANA functions operator. It should not evaluate the merits of such policies. That's pretty strong. It's a yellow... Visually, that looks very strong. It surprises me slightly that it comes out only yellow. We've discussed this appeals process in general in various ways, so I'll keep us moving on, and if people want to come back to a specific point on 12. I mean, the next item, 13, appeals process should be binding on the IANA functions operator. That's green. Number 17, standing to file appeals should be defined. In other words, it should be known who can and who cannot file for appeals. And that received a green threshold of support. In other words, not anyone could come along and file an appeal. 18, registry operators should have standing to appeal delegation and redelegation decisions to which they are a party and they believe are contrary to approved GTLD policy. CCTLD operators should have standing to appeal delegation and redelegation decisions which they are a party and that they believe that are contrary to applicable laws and or applicable approved CCTLD policy.
Green is showing 19, not 20.
The screen's showing 19. Thank you, Alan. CCNSO or GNSO, as applicable, should have standing to appeal implementation of any approved policies relating to delegation of CCTLDs or GTLDs as applicable, if they believe are inconsistent with those policies. It's yellow. There is some strong disagreement here, notwithstanding I wonder if anyone would like to explain why where the strong disagreement is. That a particular grouping that's coming from, that strong disagreement is coming from?
Alan.
Yeah, I could hypothesize that it should not be the CCNSO or the GNSO, but ICANN proper or something, you know, some other aspect of this. That the GNSO and CCNSO are not legally incorporated, and it's not clear that, you know, that they can take that kind of action unilaterally on their own. They don't, for instance, have budgets typically.
So, in other words, that may be a reason, Alan, for why there was strong disagreement, was because of the nature of the CCNSO and the GNSO.
That is what I'm suggesting. For instance, if we said they were allowed to do it, I don't know how they would do it.
Thank you. That's helpful. Martin Boyle?
Thanks, Jonathan. I actually marked completely disagree with this one, because it seemed to me to start putting the argument on the understanding of the policy into the wrong place, and it seemed to me that was a discussion that needed to be had on the understanding and of the policy itself, and therefore you didn't need to have an IAP to judge on that, but rather it should be the policy authority that was now seeking to clarify where the misinterpretation was coming in as far as they were concerned. So that was the reason and sole reason why I marked against on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Martin. Okay, let's try and conclude then with item 24, and that is that governments should have standing to appeal CCTRD delegation or REDIC delegations decisions that they believe are contrary to applicable laws only where that country's CCTLDs is involved. In other words, the country appeals in relation to its own CCTLD. And that was a pretty even spread across the answers, which is why
a lot of no response.
So that, yeah, that's worth noting the size of that no response, and if depending on how one analysed it, if that no response was counted, it might further weaken that outcome there. Eric?
Thank you. I repeat something that I said yesterday. I want to know what is the geographical distribution of this answers. If not, could be really, really strange that the majority of the answer could be from people related with the government. So clear that the attendance of point of view of them is not necessarily the same of civil society or other parts. So I want to take a special care about this answer, maybe put in frozen time to have more clear about the who answered this question. If not, will be only one point of view.
Good point. Thank you. Robert, were you responding?
I'll respond, unfortunately, Eric, the same way I did yesterday. The data points that would allow us to do that type of analysis were not collected, and so we cannot do the analysis on that point. It is maybe something to take into consideration, but we just can't do the analysis given the type of variables that you're talking about, which is civil society. All we asked for was name, affiliation, and email address. And again, when we were identifying the polls, so if any additional polls get developed in the future, I ask that you, if you think that's important and there's consensus on that, then that can be included as a variable that we can collect. Otherwise, we can't do that analysis. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert. I'm going to give
a comment. Thank Robert for that information. I really, really appreciate. For that reason, this question specifically that is related to what can do or not a government need to take care of, or in this moment of the analysis of the situation, don't take this question specifically in part of our analysis at this moment.
Yeah. Okay. Greg, I was going to give you the last word, but then Alan's hand snuck in. So we'll close the queue after Alan. We've run 20 minutes over the allotted time. So Greg and then Alan, and then we'll close things off.
Just respond briefly to Eric. I think all of these questions are being answered by stakeholders from their points of view. So I don't think we should single out any one question as somehow being more dubious for the reason that answers are coming from positions of self-interest or interest. There are no disinterested parties here.
Thanks, Greg. Alan?
Just quickly, it might be useful if for each of these two surveys, if the respondents were broken down by their affiliations as shown in the membership list, not identifying the individual people who answered, but just showing how many government, how many GAC people, how many NCSG people and whatever, based on their own admitted affiliations, did answer the question. It might be an interesting number. Thank you.
This is Robert again. The analysis becomes a lot more complicated given the way the Google survey was designed to be able to do that. And again, as I mentioned early yesterday, and I perhaps should have done that earlier today, this really aggregates all the data points collectively to give us a very quick kind of sense of the room. If you want something far more sophisticated, as Bernie, I think, mentioned as well, a lot more thought needs to be taken in terms of how it gets designed and then the appropriate tool to do that. I volunteered to do this and used a very quick tool. If you want to do that sort of analysis, the tools to do this start getting a bit more complicated. So it's something to take into consideration. That being said, and being the only one who has access to how everyone voted, I think we're just maybe trying to dig too much into this, there are comments here that maybe 10 GAC members participated and stuff like that. I'll just say that it was a reasonable distribution across stakeholder groups of people that replied, on average, given the small length of time the poll was open, I think it was a good representative, in my personal opinion, snapshot of the community, and that we're just really going too much into this. Thank you.
All right. I said I would close the queue. Alan,
I just want to answer Robert. I think he misinterpreted what I said. I was not suggesting that that analysis be done on a question-by-question basis, just on who answered the survey, period.
That's the first. Okay. Let me just go back. You have the survey results in front of you. One of the very first graphs that's there basically shows whether it's a member participant. So that's available for there. That was not included in the table, but for, poll number one and poll number two, we have a breakdown of how people self-identify themselves, whether member, participant, or other. We did not ask country or other things, and so I don't have that. But that, for the overall poll, that's how folks got broken down. I hope that answers your question. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert. Donna, the last word really does go to you, and then we'll wrap up. Donna?
Thanks, Jonathan. Yeah, sorry, it took me a while to find my unmute button. I think I was a no response on this, and I largely because CCTLD delegations, re-delegations can be quite sensitive, as is the involvement of governments in that process. And I just wonder, just as a, you know, our thinking moving forward, whether there's benefit in any of these questions associated with CC delegation, redelegation, that they be I'm using the wrong word here, but measured against the framework of interpretation work that's been done by the CCs, and that will be moved for, through the GAC as well, because there, there certainly are sensitivities around CC dels and redelegation. So maybe we need to kind of measure that against work that's going on in the community on the issue before making any major statements on it.
Yeah, and this doesn't give us the strength of response in any event to be too thoughtful on it. But yeah, that's a good point to be mindful of the framework of interpretation working group. All right, we've run well beyond the initial allotted time, but thank you for your patience. We are in a position now to look at the accountability and the links with the accountability group clearly in the session four, which puts us in a good position. So thanks for your patience and indulgence with that. And, of course, we did have a slightly later start as well. So let me let you go off for the next hour and a half. We're due to reconvene in an hour and a half and look forward to welcoming you back on for the final of our four meetings on this session. Thank you very much. We can stop the recording now and look forward to reconvening in an hour and a half.